Life.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Movement.
Movement.
It's my mistake, and let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
expression.
Expression, expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
focus,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and with me today is my co-host Gordon Barnes. Today we're going to look back at 2014 and talk about some of Amnesty International's many accomplishments in making a difference in people's lives worldwide. Welcome, Gord.
Well, it's great to be back, Jim, and it's been a busy year, 2014, a lot of things to highlight, and both in terms of the work at the international level that Amnesty International members have undertaken, but also we can make reference, if we have time in the program, to some of the things we've done right here in Regina as well.
It has been a great year, and of course, anybody that's sort of paid attention to what we've been doing, it wasn't all strictly human rights. I'm thinking in terms of our dragon boating.
Yes, and we managed to have a lot of good fun at the dragon boats once again this year. Thanks to your help, we stayed on course. You were keeping us between the lanes that we needed to be in, and it was a lot of fun.
It was interesting. We almost got swamped once, but that's almost. That doesn't count.
And it's a great team builder for anybody who might be, interested in joining us. We'll be looking for team members again this year, and you can be in touch with us and anybody else in the community, for that matter, who might be interested in looking at putting together a team for Dragon Boats. It's a lot of fun, real good team builder, and I'd encourage people to. It's just a tremendous community event,
And you know, my point is that although what we do is pretty serious stuff, we're not that serious ourselves. We're having fun.
That's right, and we've done that in other ways throughout the year. Our most recent event, Right for Rights, in December, on December 10th, for International Human Rights Day. We had a lot of good socializing, a lot of good fun, and also at the same time accomplished a lot in terms of writing letters. Want to pay a tribute to the people who were on the organizing committee for that, because, you know, we got a really good turnout this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the tally in terms of the number of letters written, appeals in support of the various cases Amnesty International was focusing on, we managed to get over 200 letters written this year.
That's
so
great.
That's fabulous. Mm-hmm. And also a special thanks to the Artful Dodger for hosting us.
Carol's great.
Yeah,
for
sure. It's been a good year. A lot of exciting events, and maybe we can come back to that a little bit throughout the program as well.
Well, let's have a look at some of the things that have happened in the world of human rights. Here's one issue in Morocco, and just an example of the sort of things that can be accomplished when you have a lot of people, and not just ourselves. We're talking about people who belong to Amnesty International, who worldwide, who are writing on these cases. This one is in Morocco, like I say, and together we changed the rape law in Morocco. The Moroccan Parliament voted unanimously to change its rape law so that rapists can no longer escape punishment by forcing their victims to marry them. It followed tireless campaigning for the family of Amina Falali, who killed herself in March of 2012 after being forced by law to marry a man she said had raped her. Similar laws still exist in Tunisia and Algeria, and we continue our fight to change them through our My Body, My Rights campaign. So just an example there, Gord, of things that need to be done and are being done.
You're right. And another kind of significant campaign that Amnesty was involved in at the beginning of the year was in the lead up to the Winter Olympics that were held in Sochi. And on February 7th, more than 336,000 Amnesty International supporters from 112 countries stood up for human rights in Russia. And together we called on President Vladimir Putin to stop the crackdown on freedom of speech and expression in the country. And, you know, it's just really interesting because just in the news this week, there's reports of a very, very large protest that's happened this week in Russia. And it was described in some of the media reports that I heard, at least, as being unprecedented in terms of the scale and how brave people are by going out and expressing their opposition to the leadership in Russia and expressing their own perspective on the direction that country should go. So the work that Amnesty supporters undertook at the beginning year was really significant.
That's for sure. And of course, Mr. Putin is finding himself in a little different position now. Things aren't going that well for him in Russia, partly because of what was going on in what is still going on in Ukraine. And, of course, now our oil prices are going down. He was riding a pretty high wave there, with the Sochi Olympics. I think he enjoyed that. But I think also just the fact that he paid attention to, what our Amnesty supporters had to say, it just points out that even somebody like Vladimir Putin pays attention to us.
Yep, that's right.
And here's another item that I'm particularly concerned about, and that's Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill. It was quite distressing to learn that Uganda went ahead. Well, first of all, they were going to pass it, then they changed their mind, and then they went ahead with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Amnesty said no to Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill. Amnesty supporters took part in a global day of action to protest Uganda's discriminatory anti-homosexuality bill. Over 86,000 people signed a petition calling on President Yoweri Museveni to veto the bill. It was declared null and void in August, a significant victory for activists. We hope this step forward translates into real improvements for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, and intersex people in Uganda. For too long, they've been trapped in a vicious circle of discrimination, threats, abuse, and injustice. And it's unfortunate that a lot of this is happening and becoming because of influence that's coming from some North American centers. And that's, you know, we'd like to be the center of understanding and free speech and tolerance. And we're kind of getting the opposite of that coming from North America in some instances. And I'm afraid that's one of the things that's happened in Uganda.
Yeah. And, you know, reflecting on events in Uganda reminds me, Jim, of the just fabulous support that happened here in Regina when we and many, many other people in the community participated in the Pride Parade in June. There was just a fabulous turnout, and people from all kinds of organizations who participated in the parade. And, you know, it wasn't the ideal weather this year, but it wasn't tough to be there. And a real good turnout. So, you know, you contrast the, I think, what I would describe as almost a joyful parade that took place here in Regina with the kind of repression that people are facing in Uganda and some other countries. It's really very unfortunate. We need to continue that area of our human rights work.
Yep, and for sure. And the thing is that although we had a wonderful turnout at the Pride Parade and were well received, you know, we had people lining the streets and cheering and all the rest of it, but there is still discrimination that exists in our own community, in our own province. And that's why we have to continue having this type of a parade, because basically it's an ongoing job. Mm-hmm. It's an ongoing job, and we can't pretend that there still isn't discrimination out there, and there's still some human rights issues that exist because of this discrimination. So I'm looking forward to next year's Pride Parade.
Right, right. So just moving forward a little bit, we were all involved in, as the international movement, in what we called the hashtag With Syria campaign. And thousands of activists gathered in more than 40 countries and marked the third anniversary of the conflict in Syria. We lit candles and released red balloons and demanded aid for all Syrians in need. And in April, Amnesty presented the United Nations Security Council members with a petition with over 140,000 signatures, calling for an immediate end to the suffering of besieged people in Syria. And just sort of reflecting on that in terms of what it means here in Canada, we've really been involved in urging the government of Canada to recognize that it has an obligation. And I think Canadians, personally, I think Canadians are very supportive of this, to help resettle as many Syrian refugees as possible. People who have had to flee that conflict, many of them in neighboring countries where it's creating incredible pressures on the host countries in the region. And really, they're not able to move forward with their lives. They're living in very difficult circumstances in refugee camps. And unfortunately, our government has not moved forward on this issue with the kind of generous approach that it did, for example, when people from Vietnam were resettled, people who were described as boat people from Cambodia and Vietnam years ago. There was a generous response in terms of people who came from other countries many years ago, for example, from Chile. We need to continue that tradition that I think Canadians do support, and unfortunately in this case, our own government needs to be pressured to move forward with that.
Now, I don't understand quite what's going on there. I understand the latest approach by the government is to accept, I believe, people who are being persecuted for their religion first sort of thing. So I suppose what they're doing is they're primarily focusing on Christians who are at risk of being discriminated against in Syria. But of course there are many other ethnic differences there that are being persecuted. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, the Yazidis and the Kurds and that sort of thing. So it's hard to agree with the position that our government has taken in terms of who they are going to accept for refugees and who they're not, and especially when the bottom line is all those people are in great need, whatever their ethnicity, whatever their religion, and they all need help.
Agreed.
And moving to a slightly different part of the world here, if you're familiar with Sri Lanka, it used to be called Ceylon, there's been so much trouble there. I think we're all familiar with the Tamil Tigers. And of course, they came out on the short end of the stick when the dust had cleared and all the armed conflict was over. And then when it was all over, there was a need to find out who were doing the abusing. And we got closer to the truth in Sri Lanka here when the United Nations voted for an independent investigation into crimes committed by state forces and armed groups at the end of the war in Sri Lanka. It followed years of campaigning by Amnesty supporters, including through our hashtag Tell the Truth campaign. The UN investigation brings new hope to thousands of survivors of torture, abduction, and other abuses. And we all know how tough it is to get the truth to come out in circumstances like that. We're still finding out things about what the CIA has been up to with regard to their interrogation of whom they deem to be terrorists. Mm-hmm. It's a very scary proposition to be deemed a terrorist, because you just have no idea what some so-called civilized countries think that is appropriate to do to a person if they think there's some information to be had. It's a very scary proposition.
Yeah. And then moving yet to another country, another region of the world, to Japan. One of the people that Amnesty had been campaigning for on an intense basis for many years, was released in, he had been in prison for 45 years. He was 78 years old.
Wow.
His name is Hakamada Awao, and he spent most of his life waiting to be executed after being convicted of murder in 1968. In March, the court revoked his death sentence and ordered a retrial, suggesting that evidence against him had been falsified. His case is a vivid reminder of the urgent need for the abolition of the death penalty worldwide.
It's funny, when you talk about the death penalty, it reminds me of Eddie Greenspan, who just passed away recently.
Yeah.
And he was, I believe, one of the main forces in convincing the Mulroney government to not go back to the death penalty in Canada. So it's hard to believe that there was a possibility of that, but thank goodness we had people like Eddie Greenspan who were willing to fight against that.
And he should be recognized for his contribution in that campaign in particular, Jim. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, it was significant that he actually took 6 months off his law practice.
Wow.
From his private practice to campaign against the return of the death penalty in Canada. That's a really significant contribution for any individual to make.
He was certainly a very special person, though, no question about that. It's hard to make lawyer jokes when you consider someone with that kind of integrity. And coming back home here, we all said, it's my body, my rights. And it's something that pertains here at home, and I guess really it pertains worldwide when you think about it. In April, an incredible 280,000 people worldwide called on their governments to protect young people's sexual and reproductive rights as part of our new My Body, My Rights campaign. Amnesty Secretary General Salil Shetty handed your signatures to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon ahead of a UN session in New York. So that would definitely get worldwide attention. That's a lot of signatures.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then to another region as well, and another area of our work, we gave Brazil a yellow card. And people might be saying, what's that about?
But yeah, that's soccer.
Soccer, of course. More than 100,000 Amnesty International supporters gave Brazil a yellow card ahead of the Football World Cup in July to remind its government that protest is not a crime. It followed a huge public demonstrations against the cost of hosting the tournament, which had been met by police with excessive force, tear gas, and rubber bullets.
That's something that we're seeing a lot of now in developing and in developed countries, Gord. I was in Toronto a few years ago for an Amnesty conference, which just happened to coincide with the G20 meeting in Toronto. And it really was appalling, the type of police activity there. And of course, after the fact, there was an awful lot of investigation into what went on. And the police were found to be in error in a number of situations. I can think of one where they actually went to a high school gymnasium and arrested people before they'd done anything. You know, that's really unheard of. And the vast majority of people there were there to protest the G20 and the sort of things that were being decided there without, you know, consulting their citizens. And there was so much concrete and wire downtown, you'd hardly recognize what was going on. And the kettling, you know, where people found themselves all grouped, they can't escape. Somebody could have been shopping for groceries, walking home, and get caught up in one of these things and end up having their freedom curtailed for hours and hours. Like I say, in hindsight, I think they realized that they'd overstepped themselves, but it was, you know, not a very comforting thing to see in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. You know, you have to wonder really if that kind of force is necessary. It just gives you pause to see that sort of thing up close and personal. Anyway, on to our a look around the world. And one of the places that we're looking at is the Central African Republic, where more than 67,000 people signed our petition to protect civilians in the Central African Republic. We were standing up for the family of Constant Yawanomo, and he was killed in a grenade attack. And we delivered all your signatures to the U.S. authorities in May, asking them to support a strong U.N. peacekeeping mission. Throughout the year, we focused on the country's human rights crisis, including war crimes and crimes against humanity. So it just add that to the list of places where Amnesty is, and basically what they're doing is where they can make a difference, and we have the resources to bring to bear, we do it. And a large part of what Amnesty is doing is paying attention to what world governments are doing and then doing something about it.
Right. A bit of good news, in our 2013 Right for Rights campaign, there was a human rights activist from Belarus who was featured, and many people will have written letters and appeals on his behalf, Alice Balatsky. And he was released in June after almost 3 years in prison. And he said the support of Amnesty campaigners led to his release. And in quotes, the thing that made a real difference were the letters I got from ordinary people. And I wanted to say a special thank you to your activists for that.
Well, Gord, believe it or not, our show is half over.
Okay.
And so we're going to take a break here now. And when we come back, we've got some special music from Jack Semple that we're going to play. So we'll play that first, and then we'll continue at our look at 2014 from the perspective of human rights and Amnesty International.
Where's the humanity? Send it down to the latest soundbite.
And that was Jack Semple. And the piece was titled Brand New Low. I think that's from his new CD. I stand to be corrected. But anyway, definitely Jack Semple. And when you hear him on the guitar, it's just amazing. Yeah. You know, I find it hard to believe that a mortal human being can play the guitar like that.
And he obviously has a good time doing it. I was at one of his more recent, I guess it was the launch for his new DVD. It was at the Artesian. It was a great crowd and a lot of fun, fabulous evening. So recommend his music.
Well, let's move along here. And we're going to look at torture. We started a campaign called Stop Torture, and Amnesty supporters across the world took to the streets on the International Day in support of victims of torture in June. It was all part of our Stop Torture campaign, which launched with the revelation that 44% of people worldwide still fear they will be tortured if they're taken into custody. To kick off, nearly 350,000 people from 117 countries signed a petition demanding justice for torture survivor Claudia Medina from Mexico. So that's a good start.
That's right. A lot more work to do, obviously, with respect to Mexico, but you know, we've got a significant campaign underway there, and we hope that moves forward in a good way. Wanted to also mention something in terms of June 2014, because it was June 11th, 2014, that the president of Paraguay finally signed into law a bill that returned more than 14,000 hectares of traditional land to an indigenous community there. It's the Sacajamaxa indigenous community. It marked a huge victory for the families who have been fighting for their rights for more than 20 years.
Were these the ones that were basically living beside the road?
Yeah, that's right. And Amnesty International campaigners and people around the world were active in providing support. But obviously the people of Paraguay and that in particular indigenous community played the crucial role in that victory.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Sometimes you think that's the sort of thing that can't be won, but it was.
That's right.
So it's great. We have, now moving right along here, we've got a person by the name of Miriam Ibrahim, who was saved from execution. She was a Christian who had been sentenced to death in Sudan, and she was finally released in June and landed in Europe in July. More than a million people worldwide supported Amnesty's call for her release. Miriam had been charged with apostasy for saying she was Christian while her father was Muslim, and with adultery after marrying a Christian man. She was 8 months pregnant when she was charged and forced to give birth in chains. Just incredible. It's kind of beyond belief, but that is exactly what happened. And once again, through the power of Amnesty paying attention and letting people know, they were able to basically force a positive outcome there.
That's right. And also in another region of the world, we stood up for democracy protesters in Hong Kong. An estimated 510,000 people took part in a protest march on July 1st, marking the 17th anniversary of Hong Kong's handover to China. Hundreds were arrested and 25 protesters involved in organizing the sit-in were investigated. And Amnesty International supporters around the world put pressure on the Hong Kong government to stop pursuing charges against peaceful protesters.
Well, it's kind of interesting the way things have unfolded there since Great Britain gave up the colony. I don't think that the Great Britain itself had that much to do with the actual governance, but they were, I guess, the source of power, let's say, for the government of Hong Kong. And what was it? Was it a 99-year lease or something like that? There was some kind of a finite lease that Great Britain had from China. And that day came, and then Hong Kong became part of China, but it's been an awkward reuniting of Hong Kong with mainland China.
That's right.
Moving right along here, we have Mikhail Kozenko, who was released from a closed psychiatric unit in Russia 2 years after being jailed for his role in largely peaceful anti-government protests in Moscow. It followed intense campaigning by Amnesty supporters, but because Mikhail's conviction was not overturned, he could be locked up again for any transgression, real or fabricated. So it just sounds like they've got a ways to go in Russia yet in terms of human rights and the rights of the ordinary citizen.
Yep. And another landmark decision, the Supreme Court in China overturned the death sentence of Li Yan for the murder of her violent husband after enduring months of domestic abuse. The decision followed intense pressure from campaigners around the world.
You know, we still face that sort of thing here in Canada. Every so often you'll have a case come up, and it's a difficult situation. Although I think that the people that get caught up in situations like that here in Canada are handled somewhat more humanely. But of course the main difference here in Canada is we do not have the death penalty, and it's hard to imagine that it wasn't that long ago that Canada had the death penalty. And as we were discussing earlier, there was a move back in Prime Minister Mulroney's time to go back to the death penalty, and thank goodness that didn't happen.
Right.
Moving right along here, we demanded an arms embargo on Israel and Gaza. People in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories suffered terribly during the 50-day conflict in Gaza. Many of the weapons fueling the violence and destruction were from foreign suppliers. That's why we called on the United Nations to immediately impose an arms embargo on Israel, Hamas, and Palestinian armed groups in Gaza. In 2015, we're focusing on making both sides accountable for any violations of international law. So that's, and of course, just as a sidebar to that, we have, I think we, it's an agreement on selling weapons that everyone has signed on to except Canada.
And, you know, when we joined with, in another, yet another area of the world, with people in El Salvador, to campaign for an end to their anti-abortion law, where women and girls from rural El Salvador were really active in this particular campaign. Local youth groups staged theater events, made impassioned speeches, played music, and dedicated the music was dedicated to 17 women who were jailed for pregnancy-related issues. The anti-abortion law in El Salvador is particularly harsh, and it's a campaign Amnesty is continuing to work on.
Yeah, so we've heard about it from time to time, and there have been particular tragic results, and it does need to be changed. On a positive note, we have a torture survivor. Angel Colon was released. Angel Colon was released in October, nearly 6 years after he was tortured and wrongly imprisoned in Mexico. Thousands of Amnesty supporters demanded his release as part of our Stop Torture campaign. And he tells us, my message to all those who are showing me their solidarity and are against torture and discrimination is, don't drop your guard. A new horizon is dawning. I feel happy about what is happening. So another instance where amnesty is slowly making a difference.
And what really can only be described as a highlight for 2014, Malala, education rights campaigner from Pakistan, was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, which was a fabulous decision. Amnesty International Secretary General said, this is an award for human rights defenders who are willing to dedicate themselves entirely to promoting education and the rights of the world's most vulnerable children. And, you know, since the announcement of that award, the Nobel Peace Award, we've seen the tragic consequences of the continued campaign by the Taliban to stop young people in Pakistan, young women going to school, where quite recently there's been a large number of people killed at and young people killed at a school. So, that work needs to continue, but we also need to celebrate Malala's having received the Nobel Peace Prize.
She is such a wonderful spokesperson for that cause.
That's right.
Just amazing. And I did make mention of arms control, and that happened in mid-December. 60 countries ratified a global arms trade treaty. And these life-saving rules on the international sale of weapons will now come into force on the 24th of December. So that's come and gone. It's in force now. It followed more than two decades of tireless campaigning from amnesty supporters like you. And unfortunately, the government of Canada did not sign on.
But we'll continue to campaign on that one as well. Something that was very significant in December was we marked the 30-year anniversary since more than 10,000 people died within 3 days as a result of a toxic gas leak at a pesticide factory in Bhopal, India. And Amnesty International supporters around the world on the 30th anniversary of Bhopal marched for justice, and we need to have the Indian government clean up the site and make sure that the companies who are responsible are held to account.
It just seems amazing that 30 years after the fact, that Union Carbide, the company that was in there, refused to make proper compensation, and Dow Chemical, who took them over, continues to refuse to compensate the victims properly.
That's right.
And it's just an ongoing travesty. It's a black eye on the industrialized world, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And here's another instance where our words changed lives. Amnesty supporters, young and old, wrote more than 2 million messages, emails, and letters as part of our Right for Rights, our global letter-writing marathon. Campaigners in more than 100 countries organized all kinds of activities, including letter-writing in the Netherlands, a 24-hour pajama party in Chile, an all-night human rights event in Burkina Faso, and a live interview with Edward Snowden in France. Together, these actions will build pressure for human rights change across the world.
Yeah. And as we mentioned earlier, the one in Regina and others in Saskatchewan and Canada were really well attended this year. And thanks to everybody who participated in that campaign, the Rights for Rights campaign. So we wanted to kind of conclude with the reference to the Stop Torture campaign, because in December, we released a report with respect to the Philippines. And in that report, it was revealed that almost anyone arrested by the police in the Philippines is at risk of torture. And supporters funded 4 billboards in cities across the country to highlight that torture can happen to anyone and is going unpunished. And fortunately, soon after, the Philippine Senate announced an inquiry into, quote, widespread police torture. And that was a really welcome first step in terms of that country and the campaign to stop torture. We've got more work to do on that, but we were very pleased to see that happen.
Yeah, it's a problem worldwide, and it almost depends on how you define torture. And, you know, you think of the unrest that's going on down in the United States, where people are struggling with the fact that if you're a person of color and you're anywhere near a situation where it's suspected or there's a possibility of a law having been broken, the color of your skin is going to make you a prime suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very unfortunate. And there's been that instance in New York City where a black man was put in an illegal chokehold by a New York City policeman and died.
Mm-hmm.
And then the policeman was found to have no blame in the incident.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to understand that sort of thing, you know, looking at it from where we are in Regina. But it definitely shows that change is needed in many locations when it comes to human rights.
Yep. I'm not sure if we've got time, Jim, but if we do have time, I'd just like to highlight something that was very, very significant in terms of this last year right here in Saskatchewan. And that is 10 years after she was murdered, there's finally somebody who has been found responsible for the murder of Daylene K. Bossy. It was in May of 2004 that she was murdered. She was a university student, 26 years old, a mother of a 3-year-old, and she was actually studying education at the University of Saskatchewan. She was a Cree woman from the Onion Lake Cree Nation. She enjoyed photography, art, and drama. It took a long time for justice in that particular case to evolve. Her parents, Pauline and Herb Muskego, I actually met myself a number of years ago on a walk when Amber Redmond was still missing. We walked together from Fort Capel to Standing Buffalo Reserve, and they shared their concerns about what had happened with Daylene at that occasion. But in this particular case, it was, as I say, 10 years ago. It happened to be the same year that the Stolen Sisters report was initially released by Amnesty International. And there's still so much work to do in this area. But in this particular case, in May of 2014, the trial started of Douglas Hales. And finally in December, it was December 17th, the judge found Hales guilty of second-degree murder, sentenced him to life in prison with no chance of parole for 15 years. Now, the circumstances of that particular case are just horrible, but in each instance where Indigenous women and girls have gone missing and have been murdered, that's the only way of describing the situation. And there's far, far too many similar stories across Canada and here in Saskatchewan. Here in Regina, there will be a trial this year, likely in 2015, for somebody who's been accused of murdering two Indigenous women here in Regina, and actually now more recently accused of sexual assault against another woman. And, you know, the work that we need to undertake in this area is really, really important, and probably one of the most, in my view, important areas of our human rights work relative to Canada. So I just wanted to note that as we can conclude this look back at 2014 and say to everybody who has participated in our work, thank you so much, because your support for our human rights work is really important. And for somebody who might be listening to the program who hasn't been involved, please feel welcome to contact us. We'd be glad to explore some of the ideas you've got in terms of your skills and interests and how you might be interested in participating in our human rights work.
Yeah, for sure. And it all comes back to our basic thing that we do, and that is letter writing. It is so powerful, and it's not difficult to start doing that. We have our letter writing on Tuesday evenings at 7 at the Atlantis Coffee Shop, and everyone is welcome there. And there are various events that that we go to, like the Pride Parade, and we show our support for those people. And there's no end of things that we can do to further the cause of human rights at home here and around the world. And that, Gord, is about time for us to wrap things up and wrap things. I guess this is our first Friday in the new year, and just looking forward to all the many activities that like dragon boating and that sort of thing that we're going to be doing in the new year.
Right.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber has been closed, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a reality for the world's people, will our work be done."